Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We are not going to actually dwell on the final Republican presidential debate prior to the Iowa caucuses. For the most part, we pretty much got what we expected. I thought most of the candidates did relatively well, and we'll see how it shakes out coming up, and we'll certainly keep tracking it as we get closer to January 3rd. But the good martini today, Jim, comes from Congress. And I think if more people were aware of this, the approval ratings for Congress would shoot through the roof. And this is tucked away in this 1,200-page so-called megabus spending bill, which I know a lot of conservatives don't like, and for very good reasons. But there is one provision in there that I am a huge fan of. Every time I get sent to the grocery store by my wife, I always come back with something that was not on the list, and that is incandescent light bulbs. Because I'm stockpiling and hoarding them because the government a few years ago announced that they're phasing out because they don't meet energy efficiency standards. Well, according to the Washington Times, congressional negotiators struck a deal Thursday that overturns the new rules that were to have banned sales of traditional incandescent light bulbs beginning next year. So apparently we can decide what light bulbs are best for our homes. The one proviso here is that the provision in the spending bill doesn't actually change what was passed a few years ago, but it does prohibit the administration from spending any money to carry it out. And of course, we all know if there's no money, it never gets done. So it's as good as a reprieve for at least a little while here. And that's great news.
It's kind of fascinating. I wonder how many folks who are completely on board with the light bulb ban also are opponents of the drug war. they believe prohibition never succeeds. I mean, you know, because you know this is going to create some sort of, you know, back alley black market for light bulbs. You know, like, it kind of shows the absurdity of things. I think it's interesting that the Democrats recognize they were on the wrong side of public opinion there. You know, as we like to light all of our Christmas trees this year, and we like to, you know, put up our Christmas lights, and all, you know, some folks use their electric menorahs as Hanukkah comes up next week. It's nice to know that we will have choice in light bulbs. It's kind of, you know, this is one of the more bizarre moments of the nanny state. But perhaps you could say this whole debate has been illuminating.
Finally, at the 11th hour, which is apparently when Congress seems to do everything, this gets at least kicked down the road a little bit. We'll see if they can actually repeal the law. But making us pay exponentially more for light bulbs, which if you drop them, require a hazmat team to respond to your home, doesn't exactly sound like a really good idea for my family. I'm sure it doesn't sound that good for yours either. So good for whoever got that done among the congressional Republicans. On to martini number two now. Unfortunately, we've got some sad news today, and that's the passing of longtime journalist Christopher Hitchens. He's been a fixture on the cable talk circuit. His writings have been very prolific, both in magazine and in book form over the years. And Jim, I think the interesting thing about Christopher Hitchens is that I don't know anyone that probably agreed with him all the time or disagreed with him all the time. I know I found myself nodding vigorously a lot when he was in favor of the Iraq war. I know I found myself vigorously disagreeing when he tried to claim that organized religion was a blight on the face of the earth. And so there are obviously very passionate opinions that run on those issues and many others that he discussed. But he always made you think and made you think through your own positions and perhaps even nuance your positions a little bit. And for that, I think we're all the better. And it's sad to see him go.
First of all, it's kind of interesting to see how much affection there is upon his passing, considering how much he could infuriate and outrage folks. I think one of my first introductions to him was reading that he had, you know, really torn into Mother Teresa of all figures. And you hear that and you think, well, he must have lost a bet or something, you know, that, you know, what the heck, you know, what kind of lunatic would go out and say that Mother Teresa is a terrible person and criticize her? And, you know, I think it's safe to say that was not his strongest argument or piece of work, but that's, you know, there's kind of an element of the fearlessness to him. And this is a guy who, when he was with you, as he, you know, arguing the case for intervention in Afghanistan and Iraq and a lot of, you know, Bush foreign policy points, you were like, yeah, you know, this guy really could, you know, punch hard metaphorically and kind of twist the knife and point out the foibles of the left and fantastic. And then he would turn around and like denounce organized religion or some aspects of American life. And you'd be like, what are you doing? What is wrong with this guy? And I think one of the things that's, you know, that's kind of refreshing about that is that let's face it, you know, Greg, you and I turn on Fox News, we're probably going to like what we hear. We turn on MSNBC, we're probably going to hear, you know, some lunatic comparing Mitt Romney to a Nazi based on a misquote. And we're going to, you know, in a very predictable political environment, Christopher Hitchens was not predictable. And what was kind of fascinating was is that, you know, this is a guy very, very tough to classify. I mean, there is no doubt, particularly you can tell the way he wrote, that he wrote this with just enormous passion, and he never went through the motions. This, you know, he gave it 110%, and I think even the folks who may have, you know, really not liked him, one of his habits was to speak ill of the dead shortly after they died, and it was kind of a, you know, not a phenomenon that I think should be widely adopted. But you know, as he wrote about his fight with cancer, it was very tough not to be moved by a guy writing just the raw honesty and pain and fear and, you know, an appointment with death that all of us will face someday. And so he wrote, you know, he really was willing to, as some writers would say, open up a vein and let it bleed out all onto the page. We probably will not see his type again. Christopher Hitchens will always stand out as one of these, you know, writers who you absolutely positively could not ignore. Hopefully he'll inspire a whole generation of folks to just let it all out and let the chips fall where they may, and I think our public debate will be better for it.
It's always difficult to transition away from a somber story like that to the crazy martini.
Our wacky one, yes.
But nonetheless,
Greg, what do we have that's zany today after that?
Today's crazy martini is Michelle Obama once again deciding that it's okay for her to take off just a day or two ahead of the president on whatever vacation they're on. She did this literally by like an hour or two going up to Martha's Vineyard for their summer vacation this year. And now she's done it to Hawaii when it seems like, you know, this situation with the payroll tax and the funding of the government will probably be taken care of within the next 48 hours or so. And you think, well, you know, she's with her kids. It's time to go there for Christmas. But there is a tab here, and it's a tab that you're paying. This is from the blog, The White House Dossier. Quote, the military jet flight alone is priced at more than $60,000, according to government estimates, but that's only the beginning. The additional cargo flight that often accompanies the First Lady on such a trip must also be paid for, as well as the limos and other accoutrements it will contain. As she will be separated from the presidential security bubble, Michelle will require her own entourage of Secret Service protection, in addition to the staffers who will be leaving early to go to Hawaii with her. The total tab will certainly be in excess of $100,000 and possibly quite a bit more. Now, for a president, Jim, who's run up more than $5 trillion in debt, $100,000 doesn't seem like a lot. But when we talk from time to time about perception and image, you know, Mitt Romney with a $10,000 bet offer at the debate, it just kind of feeds into a perception. That definitely does. And it is real money. And I'm not sure what 24 to 48 hours would have changed there. I guess you really wanted to get to the beach.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts here. The first being that I believe President Obama had signed an executive order urging federal agencies and federal employees to eliminate all unnecessary travel. I guess you could argue the First Lady is not really a federal employee. So, you know, and the second thing is that I will have a couple molecules of sympathy for President Obama in this. You tell your wife she can't take leave early for a you go ahead and see how that conversation goes. Now, having said that, you know, I'm looking at this the description over at the Washington Post, and it says First Lady Michelle Obama and First Daughter Sasha Malia are headed to Honolulu on Friday for a 17-day vacation without the president. And, you know, Obama will leave in a day or two, but I was not a fan of Bush going to his ranch in Texas for several weeks at a time. I understand the need for a vacation, and particularly around the holidays, but I just kind of feel like, you know, look, you're on the public clock 24/7. I think when you're president of the United States, you don't really get to take long vacations. And people emphasize, oh, it's a long working vacation. You know, the president never really escapes his job, never really escapes his duties. I just kind of observe, if I'm president of the United States, and that's a scenario that will not come to pass in the next, you know, 80 years, I just would try to avoid the phrase 17-day vacation. I just can't see any good that can come from it. I really can't see any good that can come from it during a time of, you know, year four of a recession. I can't, you know, already questions about spending, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and what's kind of fascinating, you know, we've, you know, chuckled about Obama and the golf. We chuckled about the Martha's Vineyard vacation, you know, and Obama never seems to care about this. I mean, he really believes he's entitled to every one of these trips, every one of these leisurely activities he gets to do, and every one, every little cent that is spent upon him. And, you know, it's not surprising that grates on people. I think one of the folks on Twitter had observed that Ronald Reagan spent every Christmas in Washington because he didn't want his Secret Service folks to have to spend the holiday away from their families. Mm. And somebody said that tells you everything you need to know about Ronald Reagan. And perhaps the 17-day vacation in Hawaii tells you almost everything you need to know about President Obama.
I hope that the Washington Post or the New York Times or, you know, one of these liberal outlets juxtaposes the stories perfectly. On the one hand, you'll have the president in a story talking about how he's the warrior for the middle class, and then the very next story is about the 17-day vacation. But, of course, he's staying.
I don't doubt that at some point during this vacation from the beach, he will have some sort of press conference in which he talks about how hard he's working for the, you know, on behalf of the middle class and denouncing the 1%.
It never stops. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a wonderful weekend, and please be sure to join us on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.